Ireland Life.
It's time to listen to the interviews from Ireland Life on Saturday, the 14th of January 2012. Ireland Life is their weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events, and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Village Butchery. You can find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Ohala. On Saturday, the 14th of January, Jan Scott talked to Mike from the Waiheke Resources Trust about the Sustainability Festival. Lynn Humphrey from Waiheke Rotary, Brian Griffiths from the Twilight Rambles, and Lloyd Whittaker from the Whittaker Music Museum.
Now, it's my pleasure to say hi to Mike, who is here to represent the Waiheke, what is the
Resources Trust.
You've rebranded it from what did it used to be?
It used to be the Waste Resources Trust.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So now it's the Waiheke Resources Trust.
It is.
Okay, now you've organised this festival on sustainability, which starts today, I gather.
Yes, a portion of it does start today. We have lots of activities through the whole week, which today actually is the start of the Junk to Funk 7-day challenge. So today's like the last day you can get those registrations in. And, you know, there's big prizes for that, for the Junk to Funk. It's been a staple on the island, a really Waiheke favorite. Last year it was primarily a fashion show, and this year there are a few changes. We're also accepting entries that involved all kinds of artist ingenuity. It could be sculpture, it could be it could be clothing, it could be anything really. What the main difference though is we have one bag of items that's kind of rubbish related or different items that we're trying to upcycle. So everyone has the same items in a bag, and they create from that bag.
So if you're going to enter in the competition in the Junk to Funk, you get exactly the same materials as the person next to you.
Exactly, yeah. Oh. Yeah. And there's different groups too, so you're not competing against age groups where you probably wouldn't be able to compete. So the kids have a group, the youth have a group, adults have a group, and there's also one for organizations, clubs. So those there's different prizes for each one. There's cash prizes. So it should be a lot of fun, competitive, hopefully.
That's great. Well, yeah, it's great that everybody's starting with the same base materials.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how many varieties we can get out of it.
Exactly. The difference is going to be kind of, you know, really showcase the ingenuity that Waihikians possess.
Yeah,
you
know. Absolutely.
So that's going on right now. You can go buy tickets just over here at the Artworks Complex from the Waste Resources Trust or the Waiheke Resources Trust.
And that's where you would enter.
Yeah, that's where you would enter. Yep. So
when do you get your materials?
You would get the materials as you would register.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And when do you have to have your finished product back by?
You have to have it back on Saturday, and then the judging's on Sunday at the market that we're
going to
have.
So that's next Saturday, the 21st.
Yep. That's exactly right.
And you bring it back into the.
Right back into the Resources Trust. We'll hold it there, and then we can showcase it through the whole market the next day, and then we'll have a judging about midday at the Sunday market.
And that is at Artworks?
Artworks Courtyard, yep. It's going to be the market day is actually kind of like the culmination, lots of different stalls, people who are coming from all over New Zealand, really, to showcase ways that we can be sustainable in a lot of different categories with our environment, our home, our community, and even taste buds.
Right.
So we can be sustainable through our taste buds.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So the people that are coming over here, are they coming over to watch what we're doing or to share what they're doing?
To share what they're doing, and hopefully, you know, Waihikians love to take spins off of things, and I think that's something we offer is, you know, options, and people can, you know, really innovate on those options. And I think it comes down to a lot of people get interested in the dollars and cents of it. There's savings to be had. Auckland Council is going to showcase how we can get grants for sustainability in our homes. And a lot of products that will be showcased there can actually help, you know, insulate your house, can help you landscape more effectively for shade and sun. Lots of different options that are going to be there to help with your bills, power bills even.
Wow, Well, I'm sure everybody would be happy about that one.
Yeah.
You talked about learning sustainability through your taste buds. I noticed that Ready Steady Cook Waiheke style is happening at the Goldie Room on January the 20th. That's the Friday.
That's correct. That's a ticketed event as well.
Mm-hmm.
Those tickets go on sale right now. You can go online to our website. Or you can come into the Waiheke Resources Trust, and tickets are $35. But we have some great personalities going to be kind of squaring off against each other.
Oh, can you give us a hint as to who might be there?
Yeah. More than a hint, I'll just tell you exactly who's going to be there. John Hawksby versus Denise Roche. And then Tony Moss from Food Embassy and Marco Edwards from TFAO.
Oh, wow.
It should be interesting, those two going against
it. Will indeed.
All the ingredients, interestingly enough, they're going to use are sourced from here on Waiheke.
Okay, so they both have the same...
And they both have the same ingredients.
Both have the same ingredients, yeah. Yes, absolutely. What a great idea.
Yeah, there's entrees and wine available. So it should be a really, really fun event. So come on, get those tickets.
Just looking at it, $35 a ticket, but that includes a glass of local wine and canapes.
That's right.
That's a pretty good price.
I'd think so, especially to have a good time with those personalities who I'm sure are going to ham it up quite extensively.
Well, I would think the entertainment alone would be worth $35.
Yeah, definitely. Right. We think so.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned the website where people can go for information, and that is...
Oh, yeah, it's www.wrt.org.nz.
Great, okay. Yeah. Or they can phone 372-2915 for tickets or more information.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Now, this is a week-long event.
It's a week-long, yes. So there's quite a few things broken up throughout the week. We're going to have a massive sign outside of Artworks Courtyard detailing those timeline of events. And basically what it is we have those ticketed events throughout. So we have Ready City Cook, like we mentioned, Junk to Funk. There's a movie screening of Enema Mundi, which is a real interesting human study of the environment and our responsibilities within that environment. That's going to be showing over here at the Waiheke Cinema. And those are $12, those tickets. And then not only those ticketed events, but we have... demos throughout the week by local Waihikians. There's quite a few people involved. Million Bernard's Waiheke Sale is going to be at the Waiheke Bowls Club, or Oniroa Bowls Club. And then I'm going to show off... It was showcased in the Gulf News about the sale program, the Waiheke Sales program. I'm going to give a demonstration about that. We also have a coffee roasting demo by Island Coffee over in Ostend at their new place. We have the Ostend Gardens, community gardens, which are going to give a tour on their open day. And we have some local apiaries, so doing a honey gleaning demonstration. So that's just a local hobbyist beekeepers that are just going to show us how it's done. There's lots of those little things throughout the week that are free. You just go and see how things are done, how to get involved, and maybe do something yourself.
That's brilliant. Yeah, because I think that there's so many of those things that we don't realize just how many people on the island are doing.
Yeah.
And how available that information is, or the products are for us to buy.
Yeah. And, Waihikians love to be able to kind of... to have that DIY attitude, and this is a great opportunity to learn those things, and that's the nature of sustainability. The more we learn, the more we can kind of put into practice for our own selves. So
absolutely. Yeah. So how did this sustainability festival come about?
It's been something that the staff member and the board members have been looking at to do in the trust for a while. They've had Junk to Funk. For a couple of years now, and that's worked out quite well. And this festival is just something that they can kind of broaden their horizons with, and really give back to the community. And that's kind of what the trust is really focused on doing is being able to be there as a resource for environmental issues, for environmental and sustainability topics to discuss. So this is kind of just like just an open market of ideas that we're trying to present to Waihikians, and they can take as much as they can from it. And hopefully we benefit the community that way.
Mm, absolutely. And I guess it's a good way for the new look trust to start out.
To
bring its profile into the community.
Sure, yeah. We just had a rebranding, and you'll see our logo there. And hopefully, you know, it's more about the people and the community that we can, you know, not necessarily show off, but be there for the community and hopefully talk with you as much as we can about what we can do, not only just in the festival, but throughout the year.
Right. Okay. Now, there's an evening on January the 21st at Artworks. Is it Petchakucha? The way you pronounce
it? Petchakucha, yeah. Some people are familiar with it, some people aren't, but it basically just means short talks, short presentations. So we're going to have basically the setup is 10 minutes, 10 slides, a minute per slide. And they're just going to be short talks, and there's all kinds of people who are going to be doing talks there. And that's it's a ticket event as well. It's $20 for those. But I mean, we have people like Pete from Ubi. If anyone's heard of the Ubi Box, he's going to be doing a presentation. I'll actually be doing a presentation on making from scratch a recycled chicken coop. And then starting off with no knowledge of chickens.
That's for recycled chickens, isn't it?
Recycled chickens. It basically is, because they were used chickens, I guess, if you want to say. That's where I got mine from. But yeah, and then starting out from zero and going to something, and something that produces 5 eggs a day for my family.
Brilliant.
So, yeah.
So how did you get involved with the trust?
You know, I do a lot of upcycling with my wife. We have another business that we do for art over at Upcycle next door. And, you know, just in my wanderings, I've kind of gone in there and talked to the wonderful staff. Anna and Dorsey are the staff there at the Trust. And just got to talking. We have a lot of similar ideas and thoughts about environment and about, you know, how much we love this area. I haven't been here for that long on Waiheke. As you can tell, I don't have a New Zealander accent, though I've been here for 3 years and I have a little girl that's a Kiwi.
Oh, great.
Yeah, a little baby. But, you know, just about that kind of love for the community and you know, keeping it Waiheke and keeping it for not for ourselves, but, you know, for us to enjoy for a long time.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. Where did you come from?
I am from the States, from a state called Michigan, notably Detroit, the city of Detroit. That's where my accent's from. Apparently, some people say I have a soft accent, but yes. Not very hard from other states. But yeah.
So, did you get into the sustainability thing over there, or was it something that you came to when you came to New Zealand?
Oh well, you know, I think for a lot of people, I mean, especially in the States, they kind of give you your first 2 years at university and say, kind of figure out what you want to do. Here's the things that you have to do, math, science, and everything, and then you kind of pick your path. And, you know, I eventually got into architecture and then planning. So I really grabbed onto the planning idea and love just how you can mix a lot of architectural themes with practical uses. And, you know, after studying those practical uses, I feel like there's such a human connection to that. And, you know, that's where it started, I guess, in university. And then I actually did a degree here at the University of Auckland. And I'm a planner.
A town planner.
A town planner, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's just really interesting work to kind of mix. It's really hard, actually, to mix successfully the built environment and you know, the community and their needs and wants and uses. So
do you find that the Auckland Council is sympathetic to the sustainability idea in architecture or planning?
Yeah, I mean, the resource on a world scale, especially the Resource Management Act, which I've studied quite a bit, it definitely deals with sustainability on a scale that really is a forerunner in the idea. There's lots of areas where we could be stronger as in any organization, but I think you know, as much as we push for the right, as much as we push to get things done the way we want, the more responsiveness we'll have. So mm-hmm. I don't think it's entirely up to the council. I think a lot of it's on us as who we elect and who we and how we represent our ideas. Mm. You know, we have to be, you know, very very forthcoming in what we want. And I think that's something that the trust is trying to do is really inform people about all kinds of areas of sustainability, and kind of knowledge is power, and that's where we're starting from.
Yeah. Well, the Resource Management Act, pardon the pun, was groundbreaking for its day because it's got to be at least 20 years old. It brought it together a whole lot of bits and pieces of legislation that was an absolute minefield. But it was a far-sighted piece of legislation back then, and it probably does need tweaking now because our ideas have changed and evolved, and we've got more and more conscious of sustainability in the environment.
Yeah, and you know, we don't want necessarily sustainability to become one of those buzzwords that fades and becomes ineffectual. You know, we want it to have potency, but in the right way, not just a movement, but you know, things that people can say, oh, I know sustainability because of this, because of that, because I saved this much of my power bill because I put insulation in.
Yep.
And there are grants for that. You know, it's just this whole stream of things that we don't want it to become a byword. We want it to be sustainable. We want it to be
and to get into everybody's day-to-day.
Yeah, day-to-day. I mean, that's the thing.
Living and
that's how I'm affected. Routine. I'm affected by my day-to-day. I don't know about anybody else, but I live day-to-day and try to plan for the future. And I have a baby girl, and that's kind of, you know, has realigned my perspectives a little bit with regards to the future. And I have great friends on Waiheke, and I'd like to spend a lot of time with them, enjoying our environment, and we can do that while we're sustainable.
Mm, absolutely, and if you're going to save money by being sustainable or being conscious of what you're doing, I think that's more of an incentive than anything for people to.
Definitely.
If somebody's going to save a few dollars in their pocket, they're more likely to do it, aren't they?
You know, I think a lot
they're
of times
not
those
to.
Yeah, those movements can gain traction by having it be the obvious option, the obviously better option. Mm-hmm. But you know, some forms of sustainability aren't quite there yet with regards to being financially viable. But you know, and if you can afford it, and you see the value in it, and there's always more value than just the money. You should do it. Mm. So, you know, it's not just about the dollars and cents, but it does help, doesn't it?
It sure does. And one of the things that you're going to save money on, of course, is eggs. With once you've got the new chicken coop up and running.
Yeah. Come to the Petrikutra and I'll show you how it's done. Some of my little tips and tricks.
It's something that I've wondered about because when I was growing up, every second house had a chicken run. Second property had a chicken run. But then I think the rules got a bit tighter and when you were in suburbia, and of course it got more and more suburban.
Oh, yeah.
So that rules tightened up about.
Well, you can still have six chickens a person here.
On a quarter acre section?
It's pretty good. I mean, five eggs a day is about my limit.
Wow.
You know, I've gotten to a point where I can, you know, get those chickens to lay about 4 or 5 eggs a day.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So we're trying to get rid of them. Having eggs every morning, I love that.
Yes.
You know, but some it might be tiresome, but. You know what's not tiresome? Not having to pay for those eggs every day.
Well, exactly. And I think you can take them along to the market on a Saturday and do a swap with somebody.
Exactly. There's tons of opportunities like that. Yeah. Grow Waiheke does a lot of those kinds of things.
Right.
Yeah.
So just to remind us about this, the festival. Today it's kicking off with the Junk to Funk.
Junk to Funk.
The final
day for registrations.
Final day for registrations.
Pick up that bag of goodies and start creating, you know, sculpturally, anything you want.
How much does it cost to enter?
Well, we have two price categories just because the kids, you know, they're only $10. So parents, it's a great opportunity to bring your kids in, have them do something right now in the summery weather. We have workshops, too, set up throughout the week. On Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday at Artworks to help them with their projects if they need any help creating. And then the second group is for everyone else, the youth, adults, and groups.
Mm-hmm.
They're $15.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, it's not bad, especially the prizes, yeah.
What happens to the creations at the end of it all? Is it going to be an auction, or do the people take their creations away?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's kind of a takeaway situation. Maybe we could work in an auction. That would be kind of interesting
to see how that would happen.
Yeah, I mean, because people get really excited about these things, and you know what? The people who create beautiful things, and I think it would probably ultimately end up with them, that decision.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, we could do that something on the fly.
Okay. And how is it going to wind up? Is there going to be a major little wind-up function? The last day?
Oh, yeah. The last day is the market day, and that's from 10 to 4 on Sunday. Lots of food vendors are going to be there. You know, hopefully we have everybody show up on a sunny, sunny day, so let's just plan on that.
Yep.
Rain or shine, it's going to happen.
Think positive.
Think positive. We have lots of covered areas over there, too, so if it does, maybe just release a drop or two from the skies, there's somewhere to put your head.
Right. And that's Sunday the 22nd, of course. We're talking about next weekend.
Yeah.
Although today, the start to get, or the last day to get your entry in for the Junk to Funk.
That's right.
And then we've got something happening tomorrow, have we?
Oh, tomorrow.
It actually opens that artworks on Monday, what I'm reading.
So it starts up on Monday. Yeah.
Okay. And then, of course, on Friday at the Goldie Room is the Ready Steady Cook, Waiheke style, with there's two groups.
Yeah, John Hawksby and Denise Roche, and then Tony Moss from Food MNC and Marco Edwards from Tefal.
Right.
So they're going to battle it out.
That will be great fun. It'll be interesting to see what their ingredients are.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there's some local ingredients that are just to die for, so... It's going to be good.
Have you had a preview?
I do have a preview, and there's quite a few great local ingredients. And, you know, it's been great to work with the people on Waiheke, and they're so giving in these donations, too. So it's just wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah.
Excellent. Do you have a sponsor at all for any of this?
Yes, we do. We have Creative Communities, which is administered through the Auckland Council, and then the Positive Futures Trust, among some other supporters.
Positive Futures Trust, is that a government or a council?
It's a trust. Yeah, it's just independent trust.
Okay,
yeah.
That you can apply to for a grant.
Yep.
Right. So those two are providing the prizes for the Junk to Funk and basic.
Yeah, the basic expenses.
Yep.
You know, you'll see the signs around town, the burlap signs with the black writing on it, black spray paint writing. And then the giant sign that's going to go up in the next couple of days. Just look for the events that you want to be involved in and just go to them. They're all spread out throughout Waiheke. They'll have the addresses right there. You know, see some honey being gleaned, see some coffee being roasted, you know, and see some things that you might want to innovate on.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. Now, the sign you just mentioned, Mike, is going up outside Artworks on Ocean View Road.
Yep.
But the other place to go to for the information is the website.
Yep, www.wrt.org.nz.
Which is www. for Waiheke RT.
Yeah. Waiheke Resources Trust is what it stands for.
Yep. .org.nz. Or you can ring the Resources Trust office at Artworks on 372-2915. So there's no excuse not to get involved with the Sustainable Trusts Festival.
That's
which
right.
We'll kick off.
First annual kicks off right now.
First annual. And, yep.
Every year after this. It'll be great.
Sounds brilliant. Thank you so much, Mike, for coming in. And
thank you.
Good luck with the festival.
Thanks, Jen.
And it's my pleasure to now welcome and say hi to Lynn Humphrey, President of Rotary. Good morning, Lynn.
Hello, Jen. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Right, yes, if you could come in close to the mic so we can hear, that'd be great. Now, Lynn, first of all, tell us something about Rotary and what it does, particularly on the island.
Worldwide, Rotary is a group of 1.2 million business professional and community leaders who do work in the community. On the island, we have 60 members, and we work in three major areas. One is community activities, so things like the beach races and the Wharf to Wharf, which we'll be talking about later. Secondly, we do international work, and we have arranged or organised a significant amount of money for international relief, disaster relief, and also for polio eradication. And the other area we work in is youth. On the island, we have supported a significant number of young people in their sporting, their cultural, and their scholastic endeavours. So you'll see us also at events like the Santa Parade and Carols by Candlelight, where we're doing marshalling. And from time to time, we're doing work behind the scenes, helping less fortunate people move accommodation, that sort of thing. And I guess in December, we always give away about, I think it's about $6,000, $7,000 worth of grocery vouchers as Christmas gifts to those less fortunate in our community.
That's terrific. I know you were hard hit last year because your major fundraiser, the beach races, couldn't be run because of the mussel shells on Onitangi Beach. That must have been a really difficult hurdle to overcome.
Well, certainly. We lost a significant amount. Normally it raises between $15,000 and $20,000 for the community. And last year also the fishing contest didn't occur, so as a result of that, in my presidency, which runs from July through to next July, one of the focuses has been to make sure that we get ourselves back into a financially secure position. So we've been a wee bit more tight on our donations, but also much more active in terms of our fundraising. And there was a casino evening, for example, organised by Margaret Hewitt, and Sharon Al-Bakari has done a fantastic job selling torches that double as radios and cell phone chargers, alarms, and she has raised a significant sum of money for overseas relief through shelter boxes.
Well, that's good to hear, because I interviewed her a few months back on that very subject, on that wonderful torch idea, and I think that sort of came, was not long after the Christchurch earthquake.
Sure.
And we're all pretty sort of disaster conscious as to what we should do when such a thing happens. So that's great to know that they've really gone well.
Yeah.
And I suppose in a backhanded sort of way, the unfortunate events that occurred last year for you, as far as the beach races and the fishing competition went, have had an upside in expanding your fundraising endeavours into different things that aren't weather conscious or weather dependent.
Yes. No, we've certainly had to take a hard look at our events and make sure that we are effective as fundraisers. It's relatively easy to put on an event. It's quite a challenge to raise money in a community where we have some very keen and outstanding sponsors, but we do tend to have to go back to them fairly regularly. So I'd like to acknowledge appreciation for our sponsors, who have been very good to us since we formed, I think it was 1998.
Okay, and who are your major sponsors?
Well, Fuller's have been very actively involved. Downers, the BNZ have been good to us. Placemakers were exceptionally good to us around the torches. So, you know, there's almost all the island businesses in one way or another do support us, and we're very grateful for that.
That's great. Of course, there's an awful lot of behind-the-scenes organisation in something like the beach races or the Wharf to Wharf or the casino night. So are all your members active in those things, or do they fall on the favoured or the few that are willing to do the work, like in most organisations?
I think overall we have a very active membership. I like to compare it to a peloton in a cycle race. There are times when people step up and do the hard yards at the front of the pack, and then they drift to the back and take a bit of time, because one of the things that is a challenge with any organisation, as you're alluding to, is the pressure that we can put on those that step up regularly. And we have one, two, three, four major events this year, and really we've had separate groups with some common members running each of those. So, you know, we do share the work around, and I'm enormously proud of the way Rotarians step up in all sorts of areas, not only as Rotarians, but you'll also find them in various other community organisations doing work as well.
Well, to be a Rotarian is a committed It's quite a commitment that you make when you join Rotary, isn't it?
Yes, and I think, you know, one of the things that I have endeavoured to do, because what Rotary International have done is make it clear that it is now up to each club to run as best it can rather than impose obligations on us. So things like compulsory attendance, which used to be a hallmark of a Rotarian, and people used to get certificates for 100% attendance, I've certainly moved away from that. I'm more interested in people who step up as and when required and do what they say they will do. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there is a commitment, but as I say, I think there are times, particularly with people with families, businesses and so on, where we have to acknowledge that actually it's in our interest to make sure they are committed but not in any way over committed.
Because we lose people if we do that. You get burnout, don't you?
Yes. Yeah.
What is the criteria to become a Rotarian?
Well, essentially, it's pretty open. There's no limitation in terms of gender, as there used to be, race or religion, anything like that. Essentially, we are looking for leaders in business, professional life, and in community life. So, across Waiheke, if you walk down the main Ocean View Road there, you will see Rotarians in just about every walk of life, you know, the medical, the educational, real estate, tourism, everything, and a lot of the commuters as well.
Right. So how frequently do you meet?
We meet every Monday.
So it's weekly?
Yes, yes. And the meetings are not too much an obligation, actually, because we are very, very fortunate that we have a speaker every Monday. I am enormously surprised at the quality of people who are available on the island or who will choose to come to speak to us from the mainland. So we actually have a program which is actually quite compelling. People enjoy coming, and the speakers are either enormously challenging, interesting, or entertaining.
Oh, that sounds great. Are you looking for members at the moment?
We're always looking for members.
So if anybody out there is interested, how would they do that?
They should call me on 372 9095, or go to our website where the information is. At Waiheke, if you Google Waiheke Rotary, you should find us.
Excellent. That's great. Well, now let's get on to, you mentioned you've got four events this year. I've got two of them written down. The Wharf Dwarf, which is coming up on, is it next weekend?
The 21st? The 21st.
And the beach races.
Sure.
So what else have you got coming
up?
Well,
when I was referring to four, I was referring to the casino evening as well.
So you'll be doing that later on in the year?
No, we've done that
In
my
and
year.
For July.
And we may do the casino evening again. We haven't made a decision on that.
Okay.
But in terms of our ongoing events in the next 6 months, we will have the Wharf to Wharf, as you say, next Saturday. We have the beach races, which are almost certain to go ahead on Sunday the 19th of February. That's just subject to the council signing off on the event. There doesn't appear to be a problem with that. So Sunday the 19th of February for that. And we have our annual fishing contest again, the King of the Bay, on the 15th of April. So it's a very busy time of year for Rotarians with their Christmas vouchers and these three events all concertinaed a little bit in the first part of the year.
Right. Now, the Wharf to Wharf next Saturday,
yep.
How's that shaping up?
It's shaping up very well. Our numbers are looking good. We are continuing our online entries, so people who wish to enter, just type in Wharf to Wharf, the two being a numerical two, not TO. Uh-huh. And you'll find entry forms there, but the late fee applies from today, so anyone who's thinking of joining or competing should perhaps get their application in today.
How much is the entry?
The entry is, let me just refer to this, I think it's $25, but I could be
wrong. So it's in that vicinity.
Yep.
Right.
And okay, we have just so people know, we have four different distances, and people can choose to either walk or run. The four distances are the wharf to wharf from Oropu to Mateatea, 25 kilometres. 13-kilometre race, which a lot of people choose to do because of the scenery, from Oropu to Onitangi. We have an Onitangi to Mateatea race, which is 12 kilometres, and we have a 7-kilometre event, which we encourage families to be involved in, from Kennedy Point to Mateatea.
Oh, that's great. It must be a bit of a logistical headache to keep track of all of that, to make sure that we don't get a cheat that comes in at Kennedy Point and then says they started at at Oropu.
Yes, we have the latest electronic timing.
Right.
And each competitor has a bib with a transponder on it, so we do actually know that.
Oh, that's good.
But it is a huge logistical exercise anyway, just having sufficient marshals. We're supported in this event by a organising committee run by Anne Brown, but also the Waiheke Dolphins netball people are very, very actively involved. And the other way we give community groups an opportunity to raise their own funds is, for example, we have 14 drink stations, each of which will be manned by a community group, and they do get paid for that. So not only do we raise the money from the entry fees and distribute the net profit, if you like, to the community, but also part of running the event is to actually give community groups an opportunity to raise their own funds.
Yes, yes, that's a great idea, because I'm involved with the Rocky Bay Memorial Cruising Club.
Yeah.
And we have the first drink stop,
that's,
I think,
right,
out of Oropu. They are pirates, so yes, I shall be there with my pirate hat on
we'll
and my parrot.
To it.
So it's great. Are you doing it yourself?
I have other roles to undertake on the day. All Rotarians are hands to the pump in terms of marshalling or organising finishes, or putting out water stations, all of those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you won't have time to run.
No.
It sounds like a good excuse.
I'll stick to it.
Yeah. Well, that's great, and thank you so much for coming in, Lynn, and all the best for Rotary this year and your fundraisers. Let's hope the weather plays ball for the Wharf to Wharf and for the beach races. So we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thanks
I
for
really
coming in.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Waiheke Radio.
Now it's time to say hello and welcome to Brian Griffiths. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm very well, thank you, Jim.
That's good. Now, you're here to talk to us about the Twilight Rambles, which are going on at the moment. I think the next one is on the 17th, is that right?
That's right.
And it's Park Point.
At Park Point.
Tell us something about the Rambles. How did they come to be arranged?
Well, the Twilight Rambles, held during January each year, started around about 10 years ago, and Forest and Bird has been involved with these walks right from the very start, although it's only the last 6 years that we've been organising them completely ourselves with funding from Auckland Council. So, yeah, about 10 years.
Okay, and it was Forest and Bird that initiated them?
Not directly. I think council was very, very keen to get a walking program established around about 10 years ago, and Forest and Bird just found itself involved with council in setting this up, with providing guides, and of course having walks through our three reserves as well. So yeah, we didn't initiate it on our own.
Right. Okay. Now the walk on the 17th. That's Monday, isn't it?
Tuesday
at 6 o'clock is Park Point. Now that's possibly a place that a lot of people wouldn't be able to get to ordinarily, isn't it? Is there a public walkway through there?
Yeah. Well, there's over the last 6 years or so, there has really been quite an expansion of the walking network on Waiheke, and the walkways around that portion of the island are some of the more recent ones. So yeah, these are areas that are accessible to the public, but you're right, people would not be aware of these areas and walkways as much as perhaps some of the old established ones.
Mm. Generally, are they fairly easy walks? People of average fitness could do them?
Yes. yes, but not consistently so. But we do try to indicate if it's going to be more difficult for people. We try and keep the walks to around about an hour and a half, 2 hours at the most. And yeah, they generally are rambles rather than very demanding hikes, if you like.
Right. And how many people would you get on average for these?
Well, it does vary. It depends on the walk itself. But the two walks that we've had this year have been particularly well supported. We had over 70 on the first walk around Ofanaki and Fossil Bay, and this last week on Tuesday the 10th, we had over 50 people doing the Maititi out of Aifeno walk.
Oh wow!
Which so and people have been very supportive and very enthusiastic about the walks. They've very much enjoyed them. So it is worth actually persevering with this, although it does involve quite a lot of work.
Mm, I imagine it would. Does this attract mainly locals, or do you have holiday makers?
I would say that certainly the first half of January we do get probably a majority of visitors to the island, and that's really good. But yeah, there's a solid core of local people involved as well. Right. And it's good to see familiar faces.
Yes, indeed. The walk on Tuesday the 17th at Park Point, just for anyone who's interested in doing that, the meeting place is the corner of Church Bay Road Extension, which is Walter Frank Drive and Cable Bay Lane, and it sets off at 6 o'clock. And you go down to Te Whareau Bay and continue around Park Point to Cable Bay and back to the starting point. So that sounds
really
good. Yeah. The walk features little-known views out to Motuhi Island and across Huruhi Bay and the Tamaki Channel. So they're free, these walks, aren't they?
Oh,
and
yes.
There's a sausage sizzle
and
at the end of it all.
Sausage sizzle at the end of it, which is always greatly look forward to, yes.
So is that is the sausage sizzle sponsored by anybody?
Yeah, Forest and Bird organises the walks, and Auckland Council provides funding.
Oh, great.
So, yeah.
So it's the council that funds the sausages.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, brilliant. That's great. And how long are these walks, how long is the programme lasting?
Well, it's just 1 month, and of course this particular year we have 5 Tuesdays in January, so we have an extra walk.
Oh, wow.
So, great. So we've got to make the money stretch a little bit further.
Yes.
Which will be okay.
So there's 3 more to come, the one Park Point and then 2 more.
Yes.
Where are the other two going, do you know?
The other two walks are at Arnitangi. One is Arnitangi Village itself. That's going to be quite an interesting one. That'll be perhaps the most demanding walk in terms of steepness, difficult tracks and so forth, but it's quite a short walk. There are lots of little reserves and little corners of Arnitangi that people are not aware of, and they're very interesting, some great views. So that's an interesting walk around Arnitangi Village itself. And then the final one is Arnitangi Reserve, and features the track extension that we're halfway through in the reserve.
This is the Forest and Bird Reserve.
Yes, yeah. And that should be very interesting. There's some great, wonderful old trees that people can see now that weren't accessible before. So we're halfway through a major upgrade of the Forest and Bird Reserve in Arnitangi.
Does that mean that you've actually got more space there than you had, or is it just reconfiguring?
It's a reconfiguring. I mean, our old track system had been down for a long time, and the tracks were well worn and becoming quite dangerous in places and very steep. So what we're doing now is reconfiguring and lengthening the track system, making the gradients much lesser. Easier for people to manage. People of virtually any level of fitness should be able to get all the way around.
That's great. So you're doing this by putting in steps or...?
No, steps definitely are not a priority. No, we will not be... There will be very few steps. It's just simply the tracks tend to be zigzag tracks.
Okay.
With nice, easy gradients.
Right. That sounds great. Now, how big is that area, is the reserve?
The Onatanga Reserve is 56 hectares altogether, which is 140 acres.
That's a large area, isn't it?
It is a very big reserve.
And how long has it been in the hands of Forest and Bird?
Since the 1960s, early to middle 1960s.
Right. Was that a gift from the government, or was that a private endowment?
It was actually a private individual, and there was an opportunity in the early 1960s to in fact obtain this land, and we haven't looked back since, because it's an absolutely wonderful bit of very, very diverse native bush.
Yes, what a wonderful legacy.
Well,
to have that
for sure.
I mean,
yes.
you couldn't possibly afford to buy it now.
No way. No. And half of it was still being farmed in the 1970s, in the early 1970s. And in fact, half of it was virtually grassland right into the early 1970s. And that's a particularly weed-infested area, unfortunately. It's the area that we're having to spend most of our time on upgrading it.
Right. So we're talking about the Onatanga Reserve, the Forest and Bird Society Reserve, and there'll be a walkthrough there on the 31st of January.
Yes, that's right.
So if you haven't been in there, or you haven't been there for a while, they've upgraded the walking tracks, and it's a whole different and much easier walk than it used to be by the sound of it. That would be a great spot to get along to on Tuesday the 31st at 6 o'clock. Are you taking that walk, Brian?
That's one I'm leading, yes.
Okay. Well, we've been talking to Brian Griffiths about the Twilight Rambles. If you'd like more information, give Brian a ring on 372-7662. There are three more walks to go before the program finishes for this summer. I loosely use that word. And the next one is this coming Tuesday, the 17th at 6 o'clock at Park Point. The meeting place is the corner of Church Bay Road Extension. It's Walter Frank Drive and Cable Bay Lane. There's no charge for these walks, and there's a free sausage sizzle at the end of it. So if you want to get fit and amongst some interesting company and see some wonderful parts of Waiheke, get involved. As I say, if you need more information, give Brian Griffiths a ring on 372-7662. Thank you, Brian, for coming
in.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
It's my pleasure to say good morning and welcome to Lloyd Whittaker. Good morning, Lloyd.
Good morning, Jan. Very nice to be here.
Yeah. And how have things gone over the Christmas period for you at the museum?
Well, it's been a bit slow at times, but then other days it's been really good. So you can never tell. We'll be there this afternoon doing a live show. We don't know whether there's no bookings today. So
what time does that start?
That always starts at 1:30, although we're there from 1 o'clock tuning the harpsichord and getting ready. Yeah. Takes quite a time.
If there's anybody out there who hasn't experienced a live show at Whittaker's Museum, you're missing out on a treat. Get along there at 1:30 this afternoon. The weather's not looking that brilliant out there, so it's a good day to go and listen to Lloyd and Joan and the wonderful instruments they've got there. You've got a whole variety of things, haven't you? From grand pianos down to little...
harmonicas, yes, through concertinas, bandoneons, right up. And now we've got a huge range there. There's at least 100, and we play a lot of those different types of from different countries. Give the history of them, of course, and how they sounded. A lot of people never heard a harpsichord or clavichord or dulcitone, of course, and there's the opportunity to hear them played.
Mm. And I mean, some of these things have gone out of production, I suppose.
Oh,
they?
Yes. There's been changes, modifications, and a lot of things have become electrified, like piano accordions. And I imported the very first. No, I didn't. Sorry, I didn't import it, but I was invited to inspect the very first electronic that came to New Zealand in 1960. And because I'd run a competition in Taranaki, I said, look, I want to buy it without even seeing it. So they sent it down. And they said, you can't have it yet because it has to go through New Zealand to procure orders. So that's right. I got it back a couple of months' time, set it up, and that was one of the changes that I had with playing at weddings and socials and Devon Motor Lodge broadcasting, of course, and it gave us a new flavour. But I really love natural instruments best of all. You know, mm-hmm. if there's something artificial, it can be good, but if you get something beautiful, it needs to come from a natural instrument with a soundboard or whatever.
Hmm. How long has it taken you to accumulate your collection?
I've collected since a kid, but you know, I've got a concertina there that came from England in 1869 with my great-great-grandparents.
Wow.
And I play it every time we do a show, a little concertina. But there's... I've been, as I say, we've started to assemble the museum about 25 years ago.
Right.
In New Plymouth.
Right. And how long have you been on the island now?
16 years, coming 17.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful addition to the island, the attractions on the island. I think it's just...
Well, so we're told.
Absolutely brilliant,
yeah.
Yes.
And we get masses of bus tours during the season. Some have been back every year.
Mm-hmm.
Tauranga, right down to even Christchurch and wherever.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Probus clubs from Auckland, of course, and all sorts of societies, schools, universities. It's really great to have them.
And, of course, you also provide the opportunity for students at the Auckland University Conservatorium to gain some performance experience.
Yes, that happened about 10 years ago, and we've had them ever since. And, look, some of these artists that have come out of Auckland, we've finished up world class. Two of them have actually, that have performed in our museum, became world champions over the years. So it's been good results, and it's good for them. String quartets and all sorts of great young pianists coming on. It's been very exciting for us being able to have a piano, a large concert grand that they can perform on, and so on.
Absolutely. And I see that the start of your new season's concert is coming up on the 21st. That's next weekend, isn't it?
That's right.
The Live at Five at Whittaker's. That's going to be your catchphrase for the year, is it?
Yes.
Excellent. And it's 5 o'clock on January the 21st, which is next Saturday.
Mm.
And it's Dr. Joe Harrop on violin and Kim Naden on piano. Kim is well known to classical music fans in Auckland. He's been down here quite a few times, hasn't he, Lloyd?
Mm, yes.
Is this Joe's first visit to the island?
Well, no, Joe performed with us about 3 years ago, and the museum was packed.
Right.
And we're getting heavy bookings coming in now, so people can phone us on the phone number 3729627, and we'll reserve a seat somewhere, and I think it's going to be nearly all reserved, but they need to be there at 4:45. We can't sort of control it if we've got huge crowds.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a very exciting concert because these two are world-class artists.
Mm.
World-class.
Well, tell us something about Joe. He's Dr. Joe. He's got a master's degree in music, is it?
That's right, yes. And he went to England and studied over there in Germany and increased his knowledge and experience, of course, and he really is a very entertaining as well as a brilliant violin player, and we're so pleased the last time he came. And of course he comes from a musical family with his father being conductor of the youth orchestra in Auckland, and so it's been really, really great getting to know that family.
So that's Paul, is it?
Yes,
the conductor of
Paul. Yes.
Right, and yes, we've known him down here too with his involvement with music on the island,
yes.
And his practice on the island, his counting practice on the island. So Joe is is Paul's son, right?
Yes.
Okay. And is he just over here on holiday, or is he back living in New Zealand?
No, he's back living. He's actually living on the island now.
Okay.
He loves it over here. I was speaking to him just a few days ago, and he goes to Auckland teaching, of course, one of the colleges, and he'll be doing a lot of programs around New Zealand, I'm sure. But he's been back a few months now, and it's so good to have him back.
Mm.
Yeah.
And Kim Naden, of course.
Yes.
I see he was repetiteur for the Royal Ballet School for some years.
That's right. Yes, he was in overseas for many years, and he's absolutely a brilliant accompanist. And not only that, but he's a character as well. And we're just so pleased to have him back again. We've had him several times over the years, but he's got... in some ways, I'd say a bit of an unusual talent. Mm-hmm. But it's beautifully classical, and he can do other things as well, of course, accompanying, and he set up different foundations around the place, and children's musical theatre in East London, and it just goes on and on. It's about two pages of history here.
Well, accompanying is an art in itself.
It's a
very specialised. It's not just a matter of playing while somebody else plays something else or sings something else. It's a whole different. You know, it's quite art, and I think it's one of those things you've either got it or you haven't.
Sure.
But tell us something about the program.
Well, we've got Corelli. Of course, Corelli is one of the early composers, just prior to Mozart, born in 1653. And he, at the time, was regarded as the world's most famous violinist. And so he wrote quite a bit of music as well, of course. They're doing a sonata in A major. And then there's Mozart. Mozart's always popular, always. Born in 1756, doing B-flat violin piano concerto. And then after interval is Beethoven's sonata for piano and violin, Opus 30, number 2 in C minor. Of course, Beethoven, we're coming up from 1653, now we're to 1770 when he was born, died in 1827. And then Cerassi, which I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. This sounds like a modern composer, so it's going to be something different, I believe, and exciting. They wouldn't be playing it otherwise. And then finishing up with Elgar, who was a British composer, born in 1857. He had a long life, 1934. Like a brush. So that's, and then we can guarantee we'll get an extra as well.
Yes, so the encore.
That's the secret.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's going to be a top concert.
Absolutely. It's going to be a brilliant concert. That's Dr. Joe Harrop on violin and Kim Naden on piano next Saturday, the 21st of January at 5 o'clock at Whittaker's. Now, this is the first of the season programs?
First of this year, yes.
Right.
We do one every month, usually. We do about 12 a year.
Right.
And various. We keep to very... Because there's a lack of classical music on the island, but we sort of tend to keep that way as much as we can because it's so popular.
Mm.
String quartets, quintets, like we've got here. But we do, we had John McKay recently, jazz, a classically trained pianist, and he's a wonderful jazz pianist. And we try to vary it, and then about three times a year, four times a year with the University School of Music. They're usually the third year pupils who are really getting up there. So it's an exciting time. Mm. We just love presenting those concerts.
The other thing, Lloyd, is that that people should know is that these concerts are really well patronised and quite often oversubscribed, aren't they? So you've got to get in early to get a good seat and to make sure you've got a seat in the first place.
Well, you may finish up with a piano stall if you come later. You could put you somewhere. There's only about twice, I think, and all the time that people couldn't get in the door. When about 130 people arrived, and of course, but I think this is going to be a good one. So long as you phone in, we put reserved tickets on all the seats. You don't have a number of anything, but the early birds get the best seats, and I think it's going to be a very exciting time.
And what is your telephone number?
372-9627. That's our home number for bookings.
9627. And how much is the ticket?
Okay, now the adults, $30. seniors, no, I'm wrong, adults 25, seniors 20. If you belong to our, or if you patronise our trust with this, you get another $5 off. So if you're a senior citizen, you can come for a top world class concert for $15.
That's amazing.
That's not to be found in the world, I don't think.
Wow.
So, yeah, we'll enjoy to have a full house.
That sounds great. And I notice the March concert coming up on the 3rd of March is the Ambrosian Singers from
yes.
Auckland.
Yes.
And they're a well-known group, aren't they?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah, and we've had the top of the world. I mean, to say it wasn't only a couple of 3 months ago we had the Royal Overseas League, and these are the people that have won the world competitions in London. And they wow. are top of the world, and they come around New Zealand, it's about every second year, I think, and they put us on the list to come over. They're sponsored in England, so, you know, it's all free apart from the cost of producing a concert. And, oh, man, the last one, I was just sitting watching, and I just went into another world.
Mm.
How beautifully and impeccably accurate and expressive it was, just, you know, wonderful to be there.
Mm. Yes, indeed. We're talking to Lloyd Whittaker about the concert series at Whittaker's Museum that they have every year. They have usually have one a month, and this year it starts off next Saturday, the 21st of January at 5 p.m. with Two's Company, Dr. Joe Harrop, violin, and Kim Naden on piano, playing a variety of music from Corelli, Mozart, Beethoven, right up to Elgar. And that is a well worth going to. As you said, Lloyd, they're both internationally recognised musicians.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And we're very lucky to get talent of that calibre on the island at such a reasonable price that the average person can probably afford to go to. And I think it's wonderful that you and Joan organise these things for the people of Waiheke and give us the opportunity to come along to concerts by world-class classical musicians that we wouldn't otherwise have.
Mm.
And also to have the benefit of your wonderful museum. So long may it continue.
Yes, and we're also thankful, of course, for our helpers and the trust. The Robertsons, you know, they're just so wonderful. We couldn't do it on our own now. We're getting, you know, up over the hill. But we have a lot of precious helpers that we couldn't do without.
That's right. And if you want to be a volunteer helper, I can say it is a lot of fun. I did it for a wee while until work commitments got a bit much for me.
Mm.
But there again, if you contact Lloyd or Joan and just let them know you're happy to help out on a roster system, which is about once a month, I think.
No, I was doing once a week, if possible, although we can share it.
But I think I was doing once a month when I was.
That's right. Yes, if you can't.
So it can be.
Yeah, can be.
Can be worked around your own.
Or can be an emergency person that can come if something's happened that we volunteer can't be there.
Mm.
So we'll always discuss that with you. Particularly if you're musically minded, it's a great fun. The ones that do it, and we have some of them are very good pianists, and they just love it to be able to practice if there's no one around.
Yes, that's right. Great. And your telephone number again, Lloyd, in case people want to volunteer or talk to you about the upcoming concert.
Right, 372-9627.
372-9627 for Whittaker's Museum. And also I'll make a point here of mentioning you've brought the program in for next Saturday's concert with Dr. Joe Harrop and Kim Naden, and I see that it's been sponsored by Coffee Espresso.
Mm.
So
yes,
that's good to have a local sponsor sponsored the program. So
we're
thanks,
always,
Coffee Espresso.
Yes, always willing for new people to come on and support the trust once a year, and then you get this $5 discount off all.
How much is the membership?
The membership is now $30 and $25 for seniors, but you get, as I say, a big discount on the concerts.
Hmm.
It's just once a month, or I think it's $50 for two, for husband and wife, and that gives you free entrance into our museum any time if you bring someone with you. you come in free. Mm-hmm. So there's advantages there.
Mm, indeed.
If you have a visitor coming over, bring them in, just show us your card that we'll recognise you probably, but it's a good thing to have.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. So give some consideration. Make it a New Year's resolution to join the Whittaker's Museum Supporters Club, well, for want of a better...
Call it what you like, but anyway, it's been a big help.
$30, and that would be great. Yes. Well, thank you very much, Lloyd, for coming in, and all the best for this year.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jan.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.